afternoon. I'm Victoria Marshall with the latest news from the Washington Watch News Desk. Yesterday, both President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris met separately with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to discuss the Israel-Hamas war. Afterward, Harris held a press conference emphasizing the need for a ceasefire deal.
And as I just told Prime Minister Netanyahu, it is time to get this deal done. So to everyone who has been calling for a ceasefire, and to everyone who yearns for peace, I see you and I hear you. Let's get the deal done so we can get a ceasefire to end the war. Let's bring the hostages home, and let's provide much-needed relief to the Palestinian people. And ultimately, I remain committed to a path forward that can lead to a two-state solution.
Today, Netanyahu met with former President Donald Trump at his residence in Mar-a-Lago in Florida. Now, turning our focus to the 2024 presidential election, former President Barack Obama has officially endorsed Harris for the Democratic nomination. Obama announced his endorsement by releasing a weirdly staged video via X.
Kamala!
Hello. Hi.
Hey there.
Aw, hi, you're both together. Oh, it's good to hear you both.
I can't have this phone call without saying to my girl Kamala, I am proud of you. This is going to be historic.
We called to say Michelle and I couldn't be prouder to endorse you and to do everything we can to get you through this election and into the Oval Office.
In a post on X, Obama wrote that at this critical moment for our country, we're going to do everything we can to make sure she wins in November. Obama's endorsement comes after it was leaked by the New York Post that Obama didn't believe Harris could beat Trump. This announcement appears to be damage control by the Obamas and the Democratic Party. And while Democrats are coalescing around Harris and enjoying a boost in polling since she replaced Biden as the nominee, her poll numbers are still not that great. Here's what CNN data guru Harry Enten is reporting.
Thing to keep in mind, I think there's all this talk of all this Harris momentum. Maybe there's a slight bit of momentum, but I would argue it's actually a little bit smaller than folks think. So pre-Biden dropping out, look, Trump was up by two over Harris. We look at the polls now this week, what do we see? We see Trump is up by one over Harris. The massive change is actually the change of candidates, because prior to Biden dropping out, he trailed by 6 points among these in these exact same polls that we look at here, where Harris was only trailing by 2 points. So the movement is actually from Biden to Harris, not actually Harris herself necessarily moving.
And in other Capitol Hill news, the House voted Wednesday for a resolution to establish a bipartisan task force to investigate the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. The task force will investigate federal, state, and local law enforcement and agency actions in the lead-up to the attempt on Trump's life on July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania. Seven Republicans and six Democrats will serve on the committee, House party leaders said in a statement. The resolution text said the task force must issue a final report to the House by December 13th. Noting that it should include, quote, any recommendations for legislative reforms necessary to prevent future security lapses, end quote. Now, this comes as the Secret Service is encouraging the Trump campaign to stop holding rallies outdoors. In response, Trump's team is scouting larger indoor arenas to accommodate thousands of rallygoers. Several conservative pundits are saying this suggestion reeks of election interference and shows the Secret Service is still not committed to adequately protecting President Trump. And those are today's headlines. I'm Victoria Marshall. For more news and commentary, be sure to check out the Washington Stand at WashingtonStand.com. Up next is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. We'll see you next week with more news and commentary.
From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Hope you've had a fantastic week, and welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I am your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you with us. Coming up today on Washington Watch.
To everyone who has been calling for a ceasefire, and to everyone who yearns for peace, I see you and I hear you. Let's get the deal done so we can get a ceasefire to end the war. Let's bring the hostages home, and let's provide much-needed relief to the Palestinian people. And ultimately, I remain committed to a path forward that can lead to a two-state solution.
Of course, that was Vice President Kamala Harris calling for a two-state solution in Israel following her meeting yesterday with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, the tone of her remarks was reportedly more critical than those that were made during her actual meeting with the prime minister, who, by the way, today is in Florida meeting with former President Trump at Mar-a-Lago. As the prime minister continues his tour throughout the United States, what kind of a response might we continue to see while he is here? How will the U.S. respond? Will we see more of what we saw Wednesday at Union Station in D.C., where pro-Hamas protesters literally took down and burned the American flag and raised up a Palestinian flag? Well, Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, will join me to talk about how the left responded to this week, to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit. And the streak of federal court rulings against the Biden administration's Title IX rewrite that attacks girls and women, well, all of the, it continues. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey will be joining me to celebrate the latest court win a little bit later in the program. And the American Federation of Teachers, this is a powerful left-wing union that thinks, frankly, that they know better than you do on what's best for your children. Well, they held their annual conference in Houston this week, and I really don't need to tell you anymore what this conference is like. The keynote speaker tells you all. Catch this clip.
Book bans in this year of our Lord 2024. And on these last two issues, just think about it. So we want to ban assault weapons, and they want to ban books.
Wow. The squeaky little voice there was Vice President Kamala Harris, for those of you who were not watching the video stream. Of course, when the left talks about banning books, they're referring to efforts from many across the country to keep pornographic material away from children. Considering what we saw when the AFT, the Federation, the teachers union here, how they teamed up with the Biden administration, how concerned should we all be if there were potentially to develop a Harris administration? What would it do to education? More importantly, what would it do to our kids in this country? I'll be discussing that important question with FRC's Meg Kilgannon a little bit later in the show. And we witnessed history this week with President Biden stepping aside as the presidential candidate, followed by the immediate coronation of Kamala Harris as the Democratic torchbearer, shall we say. Well, in our weekly worldview segment today, FRC's David Clawson and I will examine how Christians can look back on all the news of this past week from a biblical perspective. So we've got a lot coming your way. You don't want to miss any of it, but if by chance you do, you can catch it at our website, tonyperkins.com. All right, let's jump into the issues of today. As we saw already, the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke this week at a joint session, And yesterday he met with both President Biden and Vice President Harris. And of course, today he's meeting with former President Trump. But according to reports, both the Democratic leaders pushed for a ceasefire in Gaza. As I mentioned, today the prime minister is meeting with former President Trump. I wonder if that same message is going to be relayed there. Well, certainly we'll be finding out more about it. But as the tour throughout, if you will, the U.S. continues with the prime minister, what should we expect? I mean, the response he received at the joint session was remarkable. Over 50 standing ovations. I've talked to some who said they were literally tired after that speech, standing up and down, up and down. And yet, at the same time, there were protests taking place at Union Station right down the street from the Capitol in Washington, D.C. So what can we draw from what we witnessed this week? Joining me now to discuss this is Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett. He serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, as well as the Oversight and Accountability Committee. He represents the great state of Tennessee, the 2nd Congressional District there. Congressman Burchett, always great to see you.
Great seeing you, Jody. Thank you so much for having me on. And I voted today. I hope our good Christians out there remember they better get out and vote because we didn't.
Well, good. That's a great way to start.
Yeah, 20 million.
We always say.
Yeah.
That's right. And we got to pray. We got to vote. We got to stand. And thank you for bringing that to our attention afresh. For those of you in Tennessee, it's time to go get the job done today. All right, Congressman, if I can, let's jump into this. After her meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, Vice President Harris ran to the news, the cameras, almost immediately, saying that she hears everyone. She sees everyone who has been calling on a ceasefire and that she's not going to be silent. It just, I don't know, it looks, it smells like nothing but a campaign to me. Is her campaign for president clouding the work and our ally, Israel, in the Middle East?
Well, your radar is dead right, Jody. It's very clear to me of what's going on with her. You know, you've got these protesters, and the number of protesters that showed up was greatly overestimated, but they were allowed to do a lot of damage, painting things, and as you saw, taking down the American flag and putting up Hamas flags and things like that. And so it was just awful. And that's who she's appealing to. That is her base. And then she'll meet with Netanyahu and play nice. And then when she gets out, out in public, she'll play nice, but behind closed doors, she is not a friend of Israel's. And I would be very cautious of anything she says or does, because that's all she's concerned about is the campaign.
Let me interject this real quickly, because it's right there in line with what you said. But according to Israeli officials, her public remarks were much more negative than what she said to the prime minister in private. So she's like going into him saying one thing, sweet that. And then she goes in out in public and it's quite a different message. She seems to be pointing the finger at Israel publicly for what's happening in Gaza.
Yeah, and this talk of ceasefire, there'd be a ceasefire right now if Hamas would put down their arms. If they had not come across the border and violated that treaty, there would be none of this would be going on right now. Make no mistake about it. They brought it on. And another thing is, people need to realize we're funding both sides of this thing, folks. We sent $6 billion into Hamas, that crazy peer, so Biden could mix his words and say no American boots are on the ground in Gaza. And, you know, no official American boots are, but you know as well as I do, there are Americans on the ground in there and they are operating. And this thing is, I keep saying, we better let Israel do their business, because this is not our war. We do not know how to fight by that. And just like in Afghanistan, 13 brave of Americans lost because of our stupid rules of engagement, when we, in fact, had that suicide bomber in our sights, not once, but twice. I asked the Marine Corps sniper that. And that's why Netanyahu has said that. But I thought it was very bold of him and correct to say in fact, that, you know, these protesters out here, are, you know, they ought to be ashamed of themselves. And I guarantee you a lot of them aren't even American citizens. And I guarantee you that a lot of them don't even know why they're there, that were, and they're paid to be there by some billionaires that are supporting the Democratic Party. So yeah. I think folks better dig into this a little more.
Absolutely. And another strong point that he made, and the one that you referenced, I agree, I thought was terrific. But he also said specifically to the United States that the faster that they receive military aid, the faster they can finish the job. Your reaction to that statement?
Well, that's accurate. And he also noted in his statement that they would continue to work together. You know, Trump has talked about an iron dome over America, which I don't know if is, I'm sure it's feasible. I don't know at what cost, but I do know in some of our more vulnerable areas and some of our major cities that would be more suitable to a terrorist type attack, like a missile attack, that we would, in fact, be partners in that as we are in their iron dome. As you know, I mean, he told me, he said, Tim, he said, with your, you know, if they shoot a missile at us, we blow it up with your help. You know, he told me that when I visited Israel, and Netanyahu did. So there's a lot of messages in that. And you're right. I think I cramped up just from stepping up, standing up and applauding. And my hands were numb towards the end. I just tapped the desk in front of me, or the Congressman Luna was there. And she's like, what are you doing, Burchett? And I said, my hands are tired, Luna. I'm just going to slap the back of this chair right here. But, you know,
I saw you. I actually saw the two of you there. You made me chuckle.
One other thing before I forget. Speaker Pelosi, everybody ought to go back and read her tweet. She called that the worst speech, I believe, that had ever been said on that floor. And it was funny. Her former number two, whose name escapes me, who was her number two behind her when she was speaker? Well, anyway, he was on the floor yesterday praising Netanyahu and condemning the terrorists. And I thought that was an interesting, you know, Pelosi trying to appeal to that San Francisco vote she's got, which is so radical, they've lost their minds. And, you know, and I would hope some of the folks that favor the Israeli community in the business community would take note of what's happened to their Democrat Party. They have completely been subverted and ambushed by the far left, and they are no friend to Israel.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. We've got less than a minute left, but there's a lot of discussion as to whether or not Vice President Harris was the border czar. Your thoughts on that real quickly.
Yeah, all they're doing is throwing Biden under the bus over a terrible border policy and a terrible border operation. She was it at NBC, CBS, CNN. She was in charge of it. There's no question. It's just you tell a lie often enough and people start to believe it. And you saw they all got the notes. Ducey yesterday at the press conference in the White House told whatever the girl's name is, that is the press secretary, told her, said, what's this sheet of paper? Everybody seems to have one, you know, and it was orders from the Democrat Party, from the hierarchy. It's just, you know, when their overlords call, they're like Pavlov's dog. They just start salivating, and that's what happened. And it shows you the deep state is real, and we better. And I'll tell you what, you 20 million Christians who decided not to vote last time because of a mean tweet, y'all better get off your butt. You better vote, because we are going to lose our country. We will lose it, sure as the world.
Congressman Tim Burchett, always great to have you. Have a fantastic weekend. All right, friends, coming up after the break, we've had another huge victory regarding the Title IX rewrite from the Biden administration. We'll get to it after the break. Stay tuned.
Download the new Stand Firm app for Apple and Android phones today and join a wonderful community of fellow believers. We've created a special place for you to access news from a biblical perspective, read and listen to daily devotionals, pray for current events, and more. Share the Stand Firm app with your friends, family, and church members, and stand firm everywhere you go.
Hello, I'm Jody Heiss, president of FRC Action. Here in America, we thank God for the right to vote, and we can all agree on the importance of this upcoming election. Many of us want to support candidates who share our values, but we're not comfortable supporting the big national political organizations. Well, we have a solution for supporting candidates through FRC Action's Faith, Family, and Freedom Fund. Being a super PAC, it allows for unlimited individual and corporate donations, so we can endorse and fund campaigns for people who share our values. By giving to this fund, we're able to pull all of our contributions together and support and endorse like-minded candidates. That's how we move the needle. So let's be the best stewards possible and get the most out of our political contributions by uniting our efforts. For more information or to contribute, visit faithfamilyfreedomfund.org. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
All of us are born with the desire to find truth and meaning. Where did I come from? What happens when I die? While our answers to these questions may divide us, we are united in our need for the freedom to answer life's biggest questions and make life's biggest decisions for ourselves. That's why religious freedom matters for everyone. Religious freedom matters because the powerful have long wanted to control those who are less powerful. Religious freedom matters because the freedom of those who are different is often threatened by those who believe different is dangerous. At the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, we promote religious freedom for everyone because the only alternative is religious freedom for no one. We encourage Americans and the American government to engage and advocate for the persecuted, and they do. We work every day to bring good news to the afflicted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners. We do it because that's what Jesus does. We work to give freedom to others because we ourselves have been set free.
Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heitz. Glad to have you with us today. All right, this past Wednesday, a federal district court in Missouri ruled to immediately stop the Biden administration's radical rewrite of Title IX. A coalition of red state attorneys general, along with our good friends at Alliance Defending Freedom, and an Arkansas high school athlete, Amelia Ford, they all joined forces to sue the Biden administration over this illegal rewrite of Title IX. And notably in all of this, the judge who sided against the Biden administration's attack on girls and women was appointed by Democrat President Bill Clinton. We're here to discuss the good news is Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Attorney General Bailey, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always an honor.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, congratulations on yet another big court ruling. Bottom line, what will this decision do?
Well, this is an important step in protecting women's equality and the sanctity and integrity of women's sports. And it's not just about the athletic competition itself. It's about the space women need to prepare for and after an athletic competition. So bathrooms, locker rooms, hotel rooms for overnight travel, all of those things that President Biden wanted to allow men to intervene in, we put a stop to. And again, this is as much about the policy position of protecting women's equality and the sanctity of women's sports and safety as it is about the legal aspect, which is that nothing authorized the president to amend Title IX for the last 50 years. It stood for the proposition that women have equal access to sports. President Biden, through the stroke of a pen, sought to override that and allow men into women's sports, thereby perverting the plain text of the statute. I'm proud to say we delivered a win on this one, and we're going to keep fighting on this issue.
Well, and so far, from my count at least, the Biden administration is 0-for-5 now in court decisions along these lines. And I mentioned it in passing, but how notable is it that a Democrat judge ruled against the Biden administration?
Well, at the end of the day, I think it's notable because the plain text of Title IX could not be more clear. And so not even a Democratic-appointed judge could go so far as to pervert the law and authorize the executive branch of government, the president of the United States, to undermine what Congress had put into place. That violates our separation of powers doctrine. And again, a plain textual analysis of this, of the statute precluded the act that the president took. And yeah, look, this is a nationwide issue. I remember when we held our press conference when I partnered with my colleague Tim Griffin in Arkansas. General Griffin said, who could possibly be for this? Like, who's on the other side of this issue? And I think that's why you see across the country so many different courts striking down this Biden attack on women and women's equality.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it is so true. When you look at this stuff, you scratch your head saying, how can anybody be supportive of this nonsense? Tell me this. You said that this is going to have some national ramifications. I think you're spot on with that. But the Biden administration's Title IX rules were set to take effect literally next week. What does all of this mean, practically speaking, as we go forward?
Well, it prevents that perversion of the law. It prevents the Biden attack on women's sports and women equality from going into effect. And it keeps in place, a landmark in the fight for equality for women that has stood for 50 years in the sediment of case law that has built up interpreting that statute. And again, this has been something that's been celebrated in past generations, has given a women an opportunity to compete in their own athletic competitions and the safety and security of their own locker rooms, bathroom facilities, and hotel rooms as well. And so this is a monumental win, and I think it'll stay in place because at the end of the day, the president can't rewrite law without an act of Congress, and Congress is absolutely not going to undermine 50 years of women's equality.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in addition to the Title IX lawsuit, you are also in a legal battle against the state of New York over their lawfare against former President Donald Trump. Tell us the latest on that.
Yeah, we filed suit to prevent a rogue prosecutor and collusive judiciary in the state of New York from hijacking a national presidential election. This lawfare against President Trump is poisonous to our democratic process, antithetical to who we are as an American people. One can look so far as the not only the charging document, but the trial process, the gag order, and the conflict of interest by both the bench and Barr in New York and realize that the conviction is replete with constitutional error. But Alvin Bragg's objective was never to obtain a legally valid conviction. It was always to take President Trump off the campaign trail. Now, the problem is that deprives Missourians and all Americans who vote, that deprives them of access to a presidential candidate and the ability to hear from a presidential candidate. These are basic constitutional rights that Missourians have to participate in a national election on equal footing with other states. And the founders contemplated that there would be disputes amongst the states, and they codified a method by which those grievances could be redressed in Article 3, Section 2 of the United States Constitution. And so we filed an original action, Missouri versus New York, at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court took notice and demanded that New York respond. That's where we are now, and we're preparing a reply.
So where does this go from here? So the argument that you gave, that the gag order and so forth prevents Missourians from being able to hear what they need to hear from a presidential candidate, that provided adequate standing. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the argument we're making. Certainly, you know, we have a statutory process by which the political parties in the state of Missouri select electors who then go to a national convention and cast their votes for president. Certainly that's true as well with our electoral college. And so those electors have a job to do under Missouri state statute, and they're being deprived of their ability to do that job by not only the fact that President Trump was tethered to a Manhattan courtroom for weeks on end, potentially sentenced to prison and thus taken off the campaign trail permanently, but certainly gagged under the gag order and prevented from discussing political topics that are of interest to Missouri voters. I have constituents all the time reach out and say, hey, can we still vote for President Trump? What's going on with this? Can he still appear on the ballot? Can he serve as president if he is convicted? And that's another one of our arguments. It's called the Purcell Doctrine, and it stands for the proposition that courts should stay out of any case that could obfuscate an election. The Manhattan District Attorney's illicit witch hunt prosecution of President Trump is absolutely obfuscating this national presidential election, and it's depriving Missourians of their rights. And that's why we're fighting so hard at the Supreme Court.
Well, Attorney General, it is always great to have you on Washington Watch with us. And again, as I say to you time and time again, we are so grateful for the bold stance that you take. As far as timing, what do you expect next? When is this going to, when do you expect something to happen here?
Well, Missouri is going to file our response to New York. New York has said that Missourians' voices don't matter in an election process and that they get to do what they want. We reject that argument. We will articulate that in our responsive briefing. That should be on file the court next week.
All right. Fantastic. Again, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, thank you so much for joining us. God bless you. Have a great weekend.
God bless you. Thank you.
All right, friends, don't go anywhere. Much more Washington Watch coming your way right after the break. Stay tuned.
When we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you on board with us. All right. This week, Vice President Kamala Harris addressed the powerful American Federation of Teachers. They were gathered in Houston for their annual conference. This was the first time that the vice president, now as the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, it is the first time as the new candidate that she has addressed this crowd. And I must say, it was like the woke leading the woke. It was quite a joke, and I'm not even a poet. But joining me now with her reaction to all of this is Meg Kilgannon. She's the FRC's Senior Fellow for Education Studies. She also served in the Department of Education under the Trump administration. Meg, welcome back to Washington Watch. It's always an honor to have you, especially for a topic like this.
It's great to be back.
All right. I want to begin with a clip and then make a comment and get your reaction. Play, if you will, clip 5 for me.
As we all know, Randy is a force, and she has been an incredible friend and an advisor to the president and me. And I want to thank you on behalf of the president and me and our country for all that you are.
All right. So we're talking about an individual here who is an advisor to the president and the vice president, a great friend, a great force. All right. Now, with that as the backdrop, Meg, first of all, a two-part question here. Tell us about the AFT, this American Federation of Teachers. What can you tell us about them? And then specifically, the president of that organization, Randy Weingarten.
Sure. The American Federation of Teachers is a teachers union. The National Association, Education Association, used to demur at actually being called a union. They would simply insist that they were a teachers association. They're a little more honest about that now. But the American Federation of Teachers is absolutely a union. It represents teachers. It represents healthcare workers. It represents bus drivers, janitors. You know, lots of people are members of the AFT, whether they're in the education field or not. And Randy Weingarten has been leading this union for a long time. She's very close to the White House. She's very good friends with Dr. Jill Biden, who herself was a teacher. She is absolutely considers herself a player in politics, and I wouldn't see why she wouldn't, because when they were keeping schools closed at the beginning of the Biden administration. The AFT was a key advisor to the CDC in developing the plans for school reopenings, which were actually plans to keep schools closed. And we all know the harm that that did to children and families.
Okay. So that's people just need to know that backdrop here. What type of things has this AFT been pushing? What are they all about? When we say they are woke, I put that on the table.
Sure. Go for it. They're for all the things that the Democratic Party is for when it comes to education. They're for making other people pay the debts of students who took out student loans. They are for, they're against vouchers, any kind of school choice. They are for increasing teacher pay, and they are all about using their union dues and their union members in Democratic Party politics in the terms of manning polls, turning out voters. All of the machinery around the Democratic Party is based on union people largely doing that work, and this is a union that does that work.
Yeah, and they overwhelmingly this week voted to endorse Vice President Kamala Harris as the Democratic Party's presidential nominee, just as a case in point. That is who they are. Now, the vice president spoke to the teachers who were gathered there. And once again, we saw it a little bit earlier. She accused conservatives of trying to ban books. You've got to respond to that.
Sure. We're not about banning books. We are about having children protected from inappropriate material in their school libraries. And any book that's not selected by a library can still be purchased at Barnes & Noble or any other bookstore, on Amazon, or any number of places. So the book is in no way banned. We simply do not allow certain materials to be presented to children when they are incapable of understanding them or they are inappropriate educationally. And so this charge about the banning books just rings so hollow. Parents can see right through that. And it's such a weak point for them. I'm surprised she brought it up, but I guess it must work with their base. And, of course, the Democratic Party really needs to reignite their base. I was surprised at this speech's content in terms of her use of the word extremist in relation to Republicans. It was a very inflammatory speech, I thought. And given the recent assassination attempt on former President Trump, I was pretty shocked at the incendiary nature of some of her remarks in this speech.
Well, it just never ends. We've been watching this kind of rhetoric for years. We've only got less than a minute or so left, but a potential Harris administration, what would that look like for education and our children, real quickly?
Well, she absolutely is a progressive's progressive, Vice President Harris, and so she will be doing all of the things that the Biden administration has been doing and then some. You can plan on more student loan forgiveness. You can plan on more political content in classrooms. All of the same things that you've had in the Biden administration will continue in a Harris administration, unfortunately.
So, compared to the Biden administration in education, would she be better or worse?
I would imagine she'll be worse.
Wow. Thank you, Meg Kilgannon. Always great to have you on the program. Appreciate all you do. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming up next on Washington Watch after the break, there has been so much news this week, as we all know, so much. We're going to be joined with our weekly worldview segment. Joining us, David Clawson. We've got to tie all the knots together from a biblical perspective from the week. Stay tuned. We'll do so in just a moment.
Join us October 3rd through the 6th as we gather with spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives from across America at the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit in Washington, D.C. We'll pray for our nation, engage in government and culture, and stand for biblical truth alongside Christian leaders, worldview experts, and government officials. We'll discuss important issues like the sanctity of life, religious freedom, protecting students, strengthening families, praying for our nation, and how you can impact America's future from a biblical worldview. Our nation stands at a critical juncture, and we must ensure that the issues impacting faith, family, and freedom are understood and advanced. Register by July 31st and receive a $70 discount off admission. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in Him through His Word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible Reading Plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible and join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Thank you for joining us today. All right, let me begin this segment with an important announcement, and I want every one of you to listen closely to this. When Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to the joint session of Congress, he made a powerful statement. We've referred to it today. He said, "Give us the tools faster, and we'll finish the job faster." And yet we know so much has been held up on this end of things as it relates to getting Israel what they need. And so we need to urge President Biden and all the presidential candidates to stop holding up aid to Israel. This country is in an existential threat, and it should be a priority of the current chief executive, as well as every presidential candidate, to be loud and clear regarding their support for Israel. And we are asking you to join us in being loud and clear as it relates to putting some pressure on them to tell us where you stand when it comes to Israel. So we have a petition. This petition is going to go to the President Biden and all of the presidential candidates, all of them. And we want your voice. We want your signature. We want you to get on board with this. The more people behind this, the stronger statement it will have. So there are a couple of ways that you can get involved here. First, you can go online to frcaction.org/support, frcaction.org/support, or you can simply text the word support to 67742. Please help us out with this. We need to know where all these folks stand on Israel, and we need to give them what they need to do the job that they need to do. Okay, now in terms of witnessing history, no doubt we're wrapping up a week that will be written about. It will be discussed for decades to come. Last Sunday, President Biden exited the presidential race with a note posted on social media platform X. That's how he let everybody know that he was not going to run for president. He then endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee for president. This unprecedented move has prompted a flurry of news, and it's important for Christians to think about all of these developments from a biblical worldview. So joining me today for our weekly worldview conversation is David Clawson. He, of course, is the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at FRC. David, welcome to the program. Always great to have you on Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks again for having me, Jody.
All right, well, let's 30,000-foot view. What is your reaction to this week's events?
What a breathtaking 2 weeks it's been, Jody. It's actually, as we're having this conversation, it's been less than 2 weeks that the 45th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, was almost assassinated. And that, again, that's less than 2 weeks ago. And in a way, that almost seems like ancient history, seeing what's kind of unfolded since that July 13th shooting with the Republican National Convention and, you know, the historic platform that actually kind of watered down a lot of issues that social conservatives care about, the selection of J.D. Vance, senator from Ohio, 39 years old, to be the Republican nominee for vice president. And what happened earlier this week, where Joe Biden did something that hasn't happened since March of 1968, where an incumbent president decides not to pursue his party's nomination. And he would have been eligible for. And unlike Lyndon Baines Johnson, who stepped aside because of the unpopularity of the Vietnam War, Joe Biden actually went through the primary process. He won 14 million votes and then decides to walk away. So absolutely historic, Jody. And I think stepping back, kind of looking at it kind of through that lens of a biblical worldview, I think we are now seeing, and, you know, the president used the phrase passing of the torch. And in terms of biblical worldview, I think what we're now going to see moving forward, it really is, Jody, as liberal as Joe Biden is, it can get more liberal. It can get even more progressive. Oh, and yeah. I think what we're going to see now, Jody, is the leftward lurch of the Democratic Party, that I think that'll be part of Joe Biden's legacy.
Yeah, there's no question what you just said. I can't tell you, week after week after week, it seems sometimes, particularly there were certain seasons, it seemed week after week, while I was in Congress, I'd come home thinking it cannot get any worse than what we just went through, only to find out the next week it gets worse. And so you're right. I mean, there is always room for this to get worse, and we may be watching some of that right now. Now, you mentioned, of course, President Biden's historic decision, among other key events that have happened in recent days. But I noticed that there are some Christian leaders who have actually called this a selfless act. I know I kind of withdrew a little bit from that characterization, but what's your response to that thought?
I guess my thought to that is I think there's a lot we don't know. I think it'll be interesting a couple years from now. I'm sure Biden staffers are going to kind of write tell-all books where we'll learn a little bit more kind of the president's thinking in the weeks, days, and hours leading up to the decision. In my view, I don't think I feel comfortable using the phrase selfless act because look what happened for the 3 weeks between that CNN debate between Biden and Trump and to the president's decision on Sunday. It's incredible. And again, the history books are going to talk about this. You know, there's never been a more disastrous moment in a presidential campaign than that debate that Joe Biden had. You and I, Jody, have had a conversation about that shortly after the debate. That was a historic meltdown. People will be studying that. It's worse than the famous JFK versus Nixon debate where Richard Nixon was sweating, you know, and he looked kind of disheveled and unprepared. That debate triggered 3 weeks of soul searching and of uproar amongst the Democratic Party. And again, a lot we don't know at this point, but it does sure appear you had three dozen elected Democrats at the federal level calling for Biden to drop out. You had Nancy Pelosi, you had Chuck Schumer, the Clintons, the Obamas that seemed to be applying a lot of pressure from all the public available reporting. And so, in my view, it does appear that the president was pushed out. And again, we'll find out more about this. But I think as Christians, I think as a good principle, an opportunity to learn here, we should, again, reserve judgment Christians are people of truth, and I don't think we want to ever prejudge a situation, but the language of selfless act, the facts that we know don't seem to bear that out, at least at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was leaning. And beyond that, I was thinking, what's in the best interest of the country? This whole decision is not about self. It is about what's in the best interest of this country. And but anyways, let's move on, because I want to hit a series of questions that I want us all both to have, but you primarily, since this is your area of expertise, from a biblical perspective. Kamala Harris is now the presumptive nominee for the Democrats. Okay, so I want us to look at her record from a biblical perspective. Christians must vote. All right, period. We need to engage this thing. We've got to stand up to the plate and vote. Now, we may not like who we're voting for, but we have to look at who the choices are, and we have to make the best decision we can based upon biblical principles. So with Kamala Harris now being the presumptive nominee for the Democrats, I would like to for us to look at her record from a biblical perspective. So let's start with abortion. What do we know about her views on this topic?
Well, Jody, we know actually quite a bit, and the reason we know quite a bit is Kamala Harris. You know, I think a lot of people on the right are going to make the argument, rightly so. You know, this is someone who's never won a vote in a Democratic primary. You know, she ran for president 3.5 years ago, dropped out even before voting began in Iowa, and of course, this cycle she didn't get a single vote because it was Joe Biden who was the top of the ticket. But Kamala Harris has been in a high level office for 20 years prior to serving as Vice President. She was the senator from California, junior senator with Dianne Feinstein. Before that, she served several years as California's attorney general. And before that, she was the district attorney in San Francisco. And so Kamala Harris does have a track record where she's weighed in on all of these issues that Christians care about, abortion being chief among them. What's interesting, Jody, is actually Kamala Harris actually has a 0% lifetime rating from Family Research Council Action.
Zero.
0% lifetime. And she has 100%.
Let me say that one more time, people. Zero. Score. Zero.
0%.
It cannot get worse. Let's just put that on the record.
Well, what's interesting, Jody, she conversely has 100% score for Planned Parenthood. So when you're thinking about abortion, compare the Planned Parenthood scorecard versus the FRC Action scorecard. It's really, really clear. A couple things I'd love to point out, Jody, is when she was Attorney General of California, she was Attorney General David DeLeiden, did those undercover videos with the Center for Medical Progress that exposed Planned Parenthood was selling fetal remains, selling baby body parts. And when that news, it shocked the conscience of the nation, what did Kamala Harris do? She didn't go after Planned Parenthood, Jody. She went after David DeLeiden. She had his house raided. Yep. She had his computer confiscated. So it's just incredible. As a candidate for president, she asked, was running on abortion, said that she wanted to codify Roe v. Wade. She actually said she wanted to require federal preclearance for any state-level pro-life law. She obviously said she wanted to repeal the Mexico City policy, wanted to repeal the Hyde Amendment. It goes on and on. A couple other real quick votes I'll mention. As a senator, she had an opportunity to vote on several pro-life bills, including the Born Alive Survivor Protection Act that would provide protection to babies who survive abortion. She voted against that twice. She had an opportunity to vote on a bill that would make it illegal for babies who can feel pain in the womb, the Pain Capable Act. She voted against that, Jody, in 2018 and 2020. Let me just summarize this. Whenever Kamala Harris has had an opportunity to vote on a bill dealing with abortion, she has been on the pro-abortion side and has been against the pro-life side.
All right. I've got several more that I want to hit. So we're going to have to kind of rapidly go through some of these. Where does she stand on religious liberty?
Kamala Harris is the original co-sponsor of the Equality Act that would basically redefine how we understand religious freedom in this country. It would codify sexual orientation, gender identity as protected classes and exempt sexual orientation, gender identity from the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Whenever religious liberty and the claims of religious people have come into conflict with kind of the sexual revolution, unfortunately, Kamala Harris has sided with the LGBT activist over committed Christians.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned the LGBT activists. She officiated literally one of the first same-sex weddings in California. So tell us, is there more that we need to know about where her advocacy stands with LGBT issues?
I think it sums it up. But what's interesting, Jody, is it shows that she was ahead of the curve. She was ahead of Barack Obama. She was ahead of Joe Biden. In 2013, she was serving as California Attorney General. When you're the Attorney General of a state, you're responsible for defending your state's laws. And she declined, actually, the law of the state was Proposition 8, defining marriage between a man and a woman. And she declined to even enforce it. She left it up to other people to enforce her state's law because she said she just— according to her, again, she kind of made this up out of whole cloth, that she had the discretion whether or not to enforce the law and decided not to. And then as soon as this court struck down the Proposition 8 in California that defined a marriage between a man and a woman, she was the first person to officiate a wedding in San Francisco with two same-sex identifying individuals.
Wow. Okay, another big issue that comes up a lot right now, people are concerned about law and order. Just generally speaking, it's my understanding that Kamala Harris actually had that at one point raised money for the protesters during the BLM riots. So what do we know? Where does she stand on law and order, generally speaking?
Yeah, generally speaking, I think that is emblematic. Jody, I actually pulled up the tweet that you just mentioned. This was at the height of the BLM riots there in Minneapolis during the George Floyd protest. And she tweeted, if you're able to chip in now, if you're able to chip in now to the Minnesota Freedom Fund to help post bail for those protesting on the ground in Minnesota. And what's interesting, even up to earlier this week, that fund still exists. And that money, to the tune of hundreds of thousands, has actually been used to release actually pretty hardened criminals, people that as soon as they're released have committed crimes, including some people, and this has been well-documented, murder and rape. And so as to my knowledge, that tweet is still available. I wouldn't be surprised if it disappears quickly as more people realize this. But at the height of those riots, she was definitely not on the side of the police. She was on the side of the rioters.
Yeah, it's amazing. That thing may disappear before this show is over, which is less than 2 minutes. Real quickly, is there anything else in Vice President Kamala's Harris record that is worth noting, things that Christians should know about real quickly?
I'll give you one thing, Jody. I think this election, like most elections, judicial nominees, so important. Who's ever president can make up to hundreds of lifetime appointments to the federal bench. In 2018, when she was a senator, there was a gentleman named Brian Boucher who was up for a federal appointment. Ultimately, he was confirmed. But during questioning, she actually questioned him on his affiliation with the Knights of Columbus, very mainstream Catholic organization, Jody. And she asked him, do you realize the Knights of Columbus is against reproductive health? Do you realize they define marriage between a man and a woman? Again, broad mainstream Catholic views that the church has had for 2,000 years. She went after him, insinuating that anyone that holds those views is not fit for the federal judiciary. We should all be scared and unnerved by that.
David Clawson, always great to have you on these Biblical Worldview segments. Thank you so much for joining us yet again on Washington Watch. Hope you have a fantastic weekend.
You too. Thank you, Jody.
All right, friends, that wraps up another phenomenal week of news. Our mission is to keep you up to speed, up to date, and to do so from a biblical worldview perspective. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. Keep the torch ablaze. See you next week here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.